All right, everyone, welcome to the Commerce and Regulatory Reform Committee. We don't quite have a quorum yet. We will gavel in officially once we do and approve the minutes. Then we're going to jump around on the agenda just a little bit. We're going to start out with Representative Kiefer's bill, House File 1362. We'll then move on to the Hoppe bill, House File 895. Then on to the Gottwalt, House File 926. And we will complete with House File 809, Representative Anderson.
You got to be real.
Representative Kiefer. Welcome, and go ahead and get started.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Representative Andrea Kiefer. I would like to introduce House File 1362 and ask that it be passed to the Jobs and Economic Development Committee. Mr. Chair, this is truly a peace in the valley bill. This is coming from recommendations from the Workers' Comp Advisory Council. And just to give a little bit of background for people who might not be familiar with this council, it is pretty much headed by our Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry, Mr. Ken Peterson, and also kind of co-headed by our Chair of the Chamber of Commerce, Dave Olson, and the President of AFL-CIO, Chair Knutson.
Representative Kiefer, we're going to pause just a moment here. We now have quorum,
so
we will officially call the meeting to order. You may continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that just gives you a little bit of background of where this bill is coming from, and that it does have good support from people that have vetted this bill out from all angles. They've worked on this bill for about 6 months. And basically, this bill addresses the use and timing of settlement conferences before hearing, and it addresses the need for flexibility in scheduling to avoid unnecessary resets, and the need, and it also addresses the need for use of experienced and independent decision makers at a hearing. It also includes a provision requiring a change in the formula for calculating medical fees for prescription drugs. The change does not affect the schedule fee limitation, only the method of calculation. The bill also makes some technical changes, incorporating existing law changes that were not previously codified. The bill has support also from the Association of Justice and the Defense Lawyers Association. At this time, Mr. Chair, I would like to introduce the Commissioner Ken Peterson and see if any members had any questions about the bill.
Welcome, Mr. Commissioner. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Ken Peterson, the Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry. I'll just reiterate what Representative Kiefer pointed out, that it's this is a piece of the Valley bill. We've worked on it for a number of hours. The council has met three times on it, I believe, or maybe two times, and really looked at it from a variety of different points of view. One of the chief aspects of it, it's going to speed up dispute resolution. It looks funny, but we're shortening the time you have to have a settlement conference to 6 months or 180 days. That seems like a long time, but in actual reality, right now the average time, not even the limit, the average time is 212 days. So we're speeding it up considerably. It's been one of the objectives of all the parties in the workers' comp system, from injured workers to insurers to employers, and Chamber of Commerce, the AFL-CIO, just to speed it up, make the resolutions faster, and that's better for everybody. And this bill will do that. So I encourage you to support it.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one quick question. I know since the days of John Linus, your successor and predecessor, they've pretty much required Dave Olson, and I suppose it's Cher Knutson now to agree to that they've done that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mulroy, yes, they have.
Any other questions for the Commissioner? Seeing none, are there anyone else from the audience that wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, Representative Kiefer, do you have any closing thoughts?
I would just ask the members to support this. I think it's a good bill, and it'll help workers who are injured get the care they need.
Thank you, Representative Kiefer. With that, Representative Kiefer renews her motion that House File 1362 be recommended to pass and be sent to the Jobs Committee. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same. Motion is approved.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
See you. We have a member that has looked over and approves of the minutes. Representative Crawford. Thank you, Representative Crawford, for moving the minutes from...
Which meeting was that?
From April 4th. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. Next is House File 895, Chairman Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. We'd like to move House File 895 be passed and sent to, I believe, the General Register. I don't know anybody else that needs to see it. I don't know that it's a peace in the valley bill, but it's a very simple bill, and I'm not aware of any opposition. And I have Mr. Johnson here to fill in the many details that I just didn't cover.
Excellent. Mr. Johnson, if you could please state your name for the record and proceed.
And Mr. Reich from the agency.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota. And maybe if we could you put on the author's amendment?
I did not. Chairman, we can do that.
Put it in the shape. This is the Peace in the Valley Amendment between our...
Well, then let's get to that. Representative Hoppe.
I would move the A1 amendment to House File 895. And then we would achieve, Mr. Chair and members, the often elusive Peace in the Valley.
Do you prefer that we go through the amendment first, or are members okay with putting it in the shape that the author would like? Let's do it.
We can.
Excellent. All in favor of the Hoppe amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Amendment is adopted. Representative Hoppe or Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota. Committee members, as Chairman Hoppe indicated, this is actually it's a relatively small bill that clarifies a couple of areas of insurance law dealing with electronic commerce, and then it deals with a clarification also of an area of property insurance law in Minnesota that deals with policy appraisers under homeowners policies. These are not real estate appraisers. These are individuals that a homeowner can pick to decide if there's a disagreement about the amount of damages of a claim, then under the contracts there's an ability to select appraisers. And we're actually clarifying the section of the law in the bill. There's a reference to the needing to be residents of Minnesota. There are a couple of other statutes that do not have that same reference of residents, and it deals with the same kind of the exact same situation. So we're conforming the one area of the law that's in the bill, the 65A.12 sub 2, with other Minnesota law and taking out that reference to residents of the state. We actually think that again conforms the similar sections of the law dealing with the same part of the contract. So we think that's truly is a clarification of the law. The other sections of the bill, Mr. Chairman and committee members, the first one, section 1, deals with a current written notice requirement of the Minnesota Insurance Guarantee Association. And what this authorizes, it permits this notice to be given in the same medium that as the application of insurance for was made. So in other words, today these notices are printed, but many consumers do business electronically. They may buy it on the internet. And we want to be able to, frankly, give this notice to the consumer in that same medium. So it's going to save some printing costs. It's a notice that we haven't had an insolvency in Minnesota of a company in many, many years, which is a good thing. And so there's some printing going on that we think that we can move to this format. And it's just a better way, and it's a more consistent way with how consumers are buying. And the other change in the bill, Mr. Chairman and committee members, deals with the part of the Minnesota insurance code that deals with the collection of information and underwriting policies. And we're adding language in the amendment that makes it clear that individuals can give verbal authorization to collect insurance. We believe that's likely the case under current Minnesota law, the Uniform Electronic Transactions Act. But we want to make this clear in the insurance statutes that govern the collection of information that a verbal authorization is appropriate. So this is issue. All these issues we have met with Mr. Reich and the Commerce Department people, and in fact, The amendment that we offered is the language that we worked out with them to resolve some questions they had with the bill as originally drafted. We had some more changes to accomplish what we wanted to accomplish. This is a cleaner way to accomplish those changes. So that's basically the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess either of you on the first question. So does this, I couldn't quite understand if this affects the appraisers like that are come out and appraise your home for a policy, or the fire adjuster appraisers, or any, or just what it exactly
Mr.
gets
Chairman,
at.
Representative Mueller, neither of those two.
Neither. Okay.
If you, there is a particular provision, and unless you had the circumstance come up, you probably wouldn't know about this. There's a provision in property policies in Minnesota. And it doesn't, the dispute isn't whether or not there's coverage. The dispute is the amount of damages of a claim.
Right.
And so the contract gives you, the policyholder, the right to pick an appraiser. It can be an engineer, a lawyer, a real estate. There's really, it's mm-hmm. a very broadly defined category. And this law goes back many, many decades in the standard fire policy. And what we're doing is, again, so that's the type of appraiser, Mr. Chairman, Representative Mueller.
Okay.
It's not defined, but it can be any number of individuals that the homeowner picks to come to the table. The insurance company picks one, and then under the contract language, those two appraisers have to pick a third one and agree on the third one. And that's the panel that decides the amount of damages that are
claimed. And thank you, Madam Chair. Just to continue, I thought it was in that realm. And Mr. Reich, is there anything negative to the consumer in this issue?
Mr. Reich.
Excuse me, Madam Chair and Representative Mullery. As drafted, we had some concerns with respect to record keeping under UETA, which is, as Mr. Johnson noted, the Uniform Electronic Transaction Act. Under current law, electronic signatures and electronic forms can currently be used to conduct transactions. What our agreement was that the insurer keep a record of an electronic transaction that takes place, whether it's over the phone, sort of recording, or whether it's via email or on the internet or anything like that, and that's achieved in Subdivision 5 of the amended version for investigatory purposes. So our fear was that you'd give consent to something over the phone, but there wasn't necessarily a record of that, and then you get into the he said, she said. Type situation when there's a conflict. And so we talked to our enforcement folks and they're comfortable with the current language.
Thank you. One more last question, Madam Chair. Mr. Johnson, is this a second time in one session that I have to vote on your side?
Mr. Johnson?
Chair, is that a question? Or is that, I hope so.
Representative Hoppe, do you have any other comments for this bill?
No, I think that's it, unless anybody else has any questions, Madam Chair.
Are there any questions from any other members or from the audience? Oh, Representative Loon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and perhaps for Mr. Johnson or Representative Hoppe. I'm assuming the answer to this is yes, but the verbal authorization, I assume that, you know, there's generally language at the beginning of a telephone call with a company that would say acknowledging that the call may be recorded, et cetera, and that would apply in this case as well.
Mr. Johnson?
Chair, yes.
Any other questions, Representative Loon? No? Anyone from the audience which wish to testify for or against the bill? Seeing none, I would ask that we'd have a... Oh, Representative Hoppe, please renew your motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to renew my motion that House File 895 as amended be passed and sent to the General Register.
General Register, yes. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
General Register. Okay. The next bill is Representative Gottwalt. Welcome, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know that I... Do I need to do that? Representative Steve Gottwalt, author of House File 926, and I think somebody on the committee is going to have to move it.
Someone?
I'll move House
Representative
File.
Anderson?
Oh, I'll move it if you want.
Okay. Representative Atkins has moved House File 926 to be okay, go ahead.
Very good, Madam Chair, members. This is a good government bill. We have bipartisan authorship. Representatives Huntley and Hosh are on this bill along with Representative Abler and Representative Kiffmeyer and others. In the state of Minnesota, we have, I believe, the second largest number in the nation of mandated health care benefits. And I want to be clear, House File 926 is not meant to eliminate mandated benefits. What it is meant to do is engage a process of review to make sure that we're doing some analysis of the benefits, not only the new benefits that might be proposed, but existing benefits, to make sure that they are, in fact, cost-effective, to make sure that they're both medically necessary, and to understand up front what their impacts are on the healthcare marketplace and the economy. So this bill really engages that process. Right now, the 64 mandates that Minnesota has apply to only 25% of the marketplace. Not a lot of people realize that. These mandated benefits do not apply to all people with coverage in the state of Minnesota. It's only 25%. Most of those people who are covered are protected under ERISA, so they're insured by self-insured plans and other programs that do not have to abide by the 64 mandated benefits. Some would argue that mandates individually don't cost a lot of money. They might only cost 1 or 2% on the total cost of a premium. But when you add 64 mandates times even 1 or 2%, you can see where that has a tremendous impact on the total cost of health care coverage in the state of Minnesota. And again, there is bipartisan desire for us to have at least some review of those mandates and their impacts both medically and economically.
Identical.
So again, this is a review, not eliminate, process. And again, it really sets in place the evaluation process, the content. The purpose of the evaluation is to provide the legislature with a complete and timely analysis of all ramifications of any mandated health benefit proposal. The commissioner is responsible for examining both existing and to be proposed benefits. And then there is a report to the legislature that is required under this bill. Madam Chair, I'd also like to have Lisa Bodine from the Chamber of Commerce present, if she could.
Yes, thank you. Ms. Bodine, please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Lisa Bodine, and I am with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. The Minnesota Chamber has approximately 2,600 members. 70% of our members have employees in the 50 or under range, and many of them are located in your communities across the state. Just want to thank you for the opportunity to be here. And, Madam Chair, if I may have a handout distributed that will help me sure. Articulate a little.
We'll have that passed out to the members.
And the Minnesota Chamber supports this bill, and we appreciate Representative Atwell bringing it forward. As he mentioned, he really hit a lot of the highlights that are important to the Minnesota Chamber. The pie chart that's being distributed does give an overview of how Minnesotans access their healthcare market. And you'll see that only 25% of the marketplace is fully insured. And those are the small to medium-sized businesses and the individuals in your district that access insurance directly. So when a mandate is imposed by the state of Minnesota, it actually only affects this 25% of the market. So while the state and the self-insureds and the state programs, the mandate may apply, they don't have to actually apply it. So we're concerned as you can imagine, the number of businesses that are currently in that market, the 25%, the fully insured market, has declined over the last several years. In fact, it's gone down dramatically. Since 2004, over 100,000 people have lost their insurance or dropped coverage. So employers are exiting the market primarily due to the cost of insurance. So we do support this bill. We support the legislature reviewing any new mandate before it's implemented and would ask your support for this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Modine. Are there any questions from members? Is there anyone in the audience who would wish to testify for or against this bill? Well, we have an amendment. We'd like to take up the A1 amendment. Who's authoring the A1 amendment? Me. Representative Atkins?
And I would move the A1 amendment, Madam Chair.
So moved. Could you explain the amendment for us, please?
I'd be happy to, but I'd appreciate perhaps the help of the chief author of the bill on which this is actually Representative Gottwald's bill that I had drafted as an amendment. I'm getting a little bit concerned, I'm sure others are, that we have the requirement to adopt a health insurance exchange in Minnesota, and the time is rapidly drifting away in which to do that. My concern and the reason for the amendment is that if we don't do something, that the federal government will do it to us, or for us would be a nicer way to put it. They will impose a federal insurance or health insurance exchange upon Minnesota. And just based on the conversations on the House floor last night, I think it's fairly clear from both sides of the aisle that we would prefer to do this on our own. Representative Gottwald, if I might, maybe I can turn it over to you. I know you had, I don't honestly know the current status of the bill that you introduced. I'm a co-author of that with you. I believe it came up for a hearing in your committee, and I just simply don't know it. I know it didn't progress from there, but I don't know what the current procedural posture is for that.
And thank
I simply want to make certain that we pass an exchange bill this year so that we don't leave it up to the federal government to impose a health insurance exchange upon Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Atkins.
Representative
Gottwald, could you please address the questions?
Sure.
Thanks.
Madam Chair, thank you for the question, Representative Atkins, and for bringing it forward. It's nice to see bipartisan support on one of my proposals, so I appreciate that. We pulled back that bill for a number of reasons, mainly because a number of stakeholders wanted further input, and so we've decided to be a little more thoughtful about the entire approach to an exchange, and we'll address that in our own time, in our own way. But I can assure you that we have been discussing it, and like I said, we'll address it in our own time and way. So, members, I would encourage you to vote no on the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Gottwald. Are there any other questions or comments regarding the amendment from the members?
I guess I'll look to others first, but I'm a little concerned, Representative Gottwald. Perhaps you can tell me, though, are we going to pass some? Yeah, I would be happy to not move ahead with this on this bill if you can give me some assurance that we're going to pass something. So that am I wrong, by the way? My understanding of the law is that if we don't pass something here, that would go into effect by, is it January 1st? Or we've got to start the process along by January 1? Which means we have to do something this session. Is it your intention to pass something that adopts a health insurance exchange, or are you just going to default and let the federal government do it for us?
Representative Gottwald.
Madam Chair, Representative Atkins, actually January 1, 2013 is when Sebelius and Company will evaluate whether or not a state is moving along sufficiently, and then by January 1 of 2014 they would step in supposedly and implement if they make it that far. So again, we're working. We've had some discussions with the administration. We've had discussions with our own caucus, with other lawmakers, with other stakeholders, and I'm confident that we're addressing it in our own way, in our own time.
Thank you, Mr. Gottwald. Any other questions or comments?
Well,
Representative Atkins,
that's a lovely political answer. Let's do the math then. It's got to be. We have to have it in place by January 1, 2013. Right?
Representative Gottwald.
The framework.
Madam Chair, Representative Atkins, not necessarily. What happens is the federal government evaluates where you are in the process by then. There is still a great deal of question as to whether or not we need to do something this year or whether we need to do something next year to meet that. We're having some very productive conversations about that. And like I said, I think we've got it well in hand.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me lay it down in greater detail then. By the law, rather than my interpretation or your interpretation, is that some sort of progress needs to have been made by January 1, 2013. That would mean that if we, and let's, I don't know what your caucus's intent is as far as when we will come into session next year, but depending on when we come into session, if we haven't done something, then we default and let the federal government do this for us. The concern that I have is we have a short session next year. We don't seem to have made much progress on a health insurance exchange this year, and you keep saying, Representative Gottwalt, that you're, you know, people are talking and we'll do it in due time. My question is, do you have an intention of passing something this year that deals with health insurance exchanges?
Representative Gottwalt.
Madam Chair and Representative Atkins, I think it's fair to say that there is still an awful lot of questions around the ACA, things that are not entirely clear from Ario or Sebelius in Washington. As I've mentioned, we've talked with our Commerce Commissioners earlier this morning, so we're still evaluating how much we need to get done by them. But if you do the math, as you mentioned, Representative Atkins, there's actually quite a bit of time between now and January 1 of 2013. We have the entire interim. We have the entire session next year. We even have time after that if necessary. Legislatively, you're correct. We'd have a session next year in which to enact something if that's the choice. But we are still working with stakeholders on this, still talking about what the best approach is for Minnesota on this. And we're doing that in a very open way before we go ahead and bring legislation forward, if that, in fact, is what we do. We're trying to evaluate what is, in fact, best for Minnesota in the long term. I think I've made that very clear in my committee and elsewhere. Whatever we do, we need to do something to protect Minnesota's approach to health care. And it sounds like you agree with that, and I understand your concern and appreciate that. But I assure you, we are taking a very careful approach to this, and we will address it in a sufficient time frame. But I have to tell you honestly, there are people both in the Dayton administration as well as in our caucus and perhaps in yours too, who do not have a lot of clear answers about how this is going to happen, and we're trying to find out more about what the relative impacts are of bringing an exchange now or waiting to get some more clarity from the ACA and Sebelius and so forth. So this is a thoughtful, careful process without a lot of clear answers yet, and I don't mean to pass the blame, but we don't have an awful lot of clear answers from Washington yet either. But rest assured, we're not just sitting back and wondering and twiddling our thumbs. We're taking a very careful approach to this. So without telling you when or where or in what form we'd bring a bill or if we're going to bring a bill, I've got to tell you we are doing an awful lot to make sure we're doing the right thing on this.
Thank you, Representative Gottwalt. Are there any other questions or anyone else that would like to speak to Mr. Hickey? Representative Gottwalt, do you want to introduce Mr. Hickey, or do you want me to?
Madam Chair, maybe we'd want to act on the amendment. I think Mr. Hickey's here to speak on the bill, and I apologize for not having brought him up previously. He was supposed to be testifying on the bill, but maybe we could dispense with the amendment and then introduce Mr.
Well, and before that, I have an additional question relative to the amendment, please.
Relative to the amendment, Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Gottwalt, we sent up both of the proposed amendments. Are you familiar with the A2 as well? Do you have a preference for one versus the other?
Representative Gottwalt, sorry.
Madam Chair, actually, my response is similar on both. I mean, one simply gives the commissioner permission to move ahead without further legislative authority on creating an exchange. As I mentioned, we've been in conversation with his office as well, and they seem comfortable with the fact that we are looking this over and being careful about it. So I don't think we need this right now. Again, we will address it at the appropriate time and place, and we've kind of made it clear that we're in charge of that process as the majority here in the legislature. We don't think it's appropriate to give the commissioner unilateral authority to move ahead with it, frankly. I think the legislature needs to weigh in on that. And so I would ask for a no vote on the Second Amendment as well if you decide to bring it. But I think the response is basically the same.
And Madam Chair, it's my intent to withdraw the amendments. I appreciate the assurance of the chair in your capacity of chair as of the other committee. The concern is very genuine. I'm sure it is on your part as much as it is on mine and members of the minority, is that we are rapidly approaching the policy deadline of April 29th. Just 3 weeks away, we've got about a week-long break in there as well. And I suspect, if I know my friend Representative Zellers or Speaker Zellers and Majority Leader Dean, that they're not going to want to come into session terribly early next year. At least I hope not. So if we come in, we come in late, and we only have a very brief period of time, that doesn't give us a whole lot of window left in which to avoid having the federal government come in and do this to us. And from what I've heard from Representative Huntley and others, the intent would be to establish a national exchange, not one that is of Midwestern states, not one that is, you know, Wisconsin and the Dakotas or something like that, but one that would thrust us into a situation wherein we're in a program with the rest of the nation, which may or may not be in our interest. And so, Chairman Gottwalt, I appreciate your assurance that things are moving. I will just see what the next few weeks hold. I wish you the best in trying to carry that out. If we get to the House floor, it wouldn't be any surprise that we might have additional amendments if it's May 15th or something like that before this this bill or other bills come before us. But we just want to make sure that we don't have the federal government stepping in, overstepping, in my opinion, overstepping its bounds and forcing a health care exchange on us by a default, by our lack of action. So with that, Madam Chair, I withdraw the amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. Representative Gottwalt, do you have any further comments to the amendment?
None, no. Okay. I appreciate the concern, Representative Atkins. If I could introduce Mr. Hickey.
Just one moment, please. I just want to officially say that Representative Atkins withdrew his amendments. And to that, Mr. Hickey, I'd like to have you speak to the bill. Please introduce
Madam
yourself.
Chair.
Thank you.
Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business, and I'm just speaking to House File 926. National Federation of Independent Business is the probably the group the most affected by state mandates, and we've fought them over the years, trying to get the message to people that you know, these are mandates that are falling on small businesses and worse yet individuals sometimes, and not on the large Fortune 500 companies of this state. And I think that's fallen on deaf ears due to the fact that Minnesota has 69 and we're leading the league in a category I wish we weren't, or we're a close second if we're not. Really want to thank Representative Gottwald for bringing this forward. He's helped us in this battle, and Representative Atkins has helped us in this battle, passing legislation to try to allow choice or ability of people to exempt some of the mandates and try to apply what they need to apply and try to reduce the cost of their policy. And so several people in this room have been a big help help on the issue. This is really a necessary thing to do. It's ironic we're getting to it via Obamacare, but that's the circumstances. And Minnesota could have some new fiscal liability that it probably does not want if we find that a lot of these mandates, and I think it's a pretty good bet, a lot of them won't be in the national essential benefit set. And so we could find ourselves having a fiscal liability to subsidize people who get into the exchanges. If the whole law gets this far, and it's 2014 or 2015, and we're seeing the whole law the way it sits today, remaining people receiving subsidized coverage that the state would have to subsidize. So it's a real essential thing to do an analysis on this, get a handle on it, and it's going to be very curious to see what degree we exceed the federal benefit set, because the Secretary is trying to do something that works for the whole country, keeping places in the Midwest like Oklahoma, Nebraska, and the South in mind that have way fewer mandates than Minnesota. So the Secretary is trying to look at this from a national picture. But this is a very essential thing to do, and appreciate Representative Gottwald stepping up and doing it, and it'd be interesting to get to the bottom of the cost of some of these mandates, too, and maybe we will through that exercise, since we usually don't know when we pass them. So thanks for the time.
Thank you, Mr. Hickey. Are there any other questions from members for either Mr. Hickey or Mr. Gottwald, or Representative Gottwald? Anyone
Madam
from
Chair,
the
audience? Just a point, then, and that is that, thank you, Madam Chair, and to Mr. Hickey's point, the there were a number of folks in the room that participated in the mandate flexibility, I guess would be the best way to put it. I happen to end up as the chief author, but in particular, she's little over there, so you might have missed her, but Representative Loon was a real leader on that front, and wanted to make sure that her efforts were acknowledged as well.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. Representative Atkins, would you like to...
I would renew my motion that House File 926 be recommended to pass, and where are we sending it? Oh, I thought you said education reform. That's where you want to go, Gottwalt. It's to the Education Reform Committee, not to the HHS reform.
Yes.
All right.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
This motion is carried, and we'll be going to HHS reform. Thank you, Representative Gatwell.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members.
House File 809, Representative Anderson, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are you ready, Representative Anderson?
Okay. I am. Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 809 and have it recommended to pass and referred to the General Register.
And Representative Anderson, do you have an amendment on this?
I do. It is being passed out right now. It's a delete everything amendment.
Okay. We need to vote on this
first. And Madam Chair, I imagine I should probably move that first.
Yeah. And describe the bill, please.
Sure.
Amendment.
Would you like me to make the motion first to describe the amendment?
Sure. You can make the motion.
I move the Delete Everything Amendment 2 to House File 809. Members, what we're doing here is current law doesn't allow a restaurant owner to keep or safeguard tips that employees have made over the course of an evening. And so what we're doing is three things. Is one, allowing the restaurant owner to safeguard the tips at the request of staff. We're also allowing them to keep record of those tips. And then third, allowing the employer to post the law so that the employees know what current law is in this regard. We have, as Representative Davids would so fondly say, peace in the valley when it comes to this issue. But I'm open to any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Do you want to move your amendment now?
I believe I did.
You did. Okay. Should we take any discussion of the amendment? Representative Anzel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Line 1.11 of the amendment, could you describe for me what your intent is by the words free of any employer participation?
Representative Anderson?
Sure. Madam Chair, Representative Anzel, that's current law that's in there right now. And so in any of these situations, as far as a free of employer participation, it would have to be at the request of the staff to do this. So this is a staff initiative asking their employer to safeguard their tips and so forth.
Representative Anzel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anderson, can you tell us who these employees are that have asked you to do this?
Sure.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anzel, this would be wait staff, servers, things of that nature. Yep, people that.
Representative Anzel.
Could you be a little more specific? I mean, restaurant workers where? At Ground Round in Woodbury or some steakhouse someplace? Or how about Mancini's where the Ranger Party is going to be next Tuesday at 6 o'clock, April 12th?
How long does LA
6 o'clock until you guys want to go home.
Representative okay. Anderson?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Anzel for the shameless plug there on the event, but always a good time. Well, I'll give you this an example. I was a waitress throughout college. That's how I was able to pay for college. So as a waitress at the a club, the Gichigami Club in Duluth, mind you, that would be me. Or say you are at Mancini's or, you know, Ground Round or any of these restaurants that you are as wait staff serving tables, if you wanted to have your tips pooled and have that your employer safeguard those tips, say your shift ended at 9 and you still had a couple tables out, then that way your employer could hang on to your tips for you so the next day that you come in for work you'd be able to access those tips. So,
Representative Anzel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well then, Representative Anderson, in your experience, can you describe for me under what set of circumstances a hard-working waitstaff person would want to voluntarily give of their hard-earned tips to somebody else?
Sure.
And then ask the employer as you say, to safeguard the tip, the gratuity amount. I mean,
Representative Anderson?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Anzell. A couple of reasons, as I outlined a little bit earlier. Say, for example, your shift is done at 9 o'clock. You still have a couple of tables that are still out. They haven't paid their bill yet. And so those tips would be left there. You could ask your employer to safeguard those tips so that the next day that you could come in, you would be able to get those tips. Another reason might be that, say, you want to pool your tips with your fellow employees. Maybe it's the folks that bust the tables afterwards. If you happen to work at a restaurant where you as the waitress are not required to clear the table, you have somebody else that does that, you know, a whole host of things, if that gives you a better idea.
You okay? Representative Mullery, did you have a question?
Madam Chair, I was just going to get into the sharing with busboys and things like that, because I know that that's done a lot also. She's already brought that up in answering his question.
Thank you. Anyone else, members, have any other questions for Representative Anderson? Anyone in the audience like to testify for or against this bill?
Are we still, Madam Chair, are we still on the amendment or on the bill?
We need to pass that amendment, don't we? We should vote on this amendment. All in favor of the DE2 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
It passed to the bill. We're going to vote on the bill, right?
I do have a question.
The bill?
On the
Representative
bill
Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Anderson, were you one of those with your tips? Were you above or below $100,000? I don't know what caused that to come into mind.
Chair, Representative Atkins, it took me until I was 30 to pay off my college loan, so I'm guessing I wasn't in the top category.
Thank you, Representative Atkins.
Chairman Hoppe did indicate that he worked his way through college as a waitress as well. And I think we call them servers now. But
you could call them what you'd like.
The real question is this, if it gets to the House floor, which I'm guessing it will, this is not controversial except with my friend Representative Anseltz. Even my wife, who is a longtime server and then a director of catering, said it's already going on. It makes sense. The employees are who want it. And the employer just kind of serves the purpose of safeguarding the money or the tips when they're until they're distributed. But is this any chance that it becomes a vehicle for a tip credit or something much more controversial that would not have come through the committee process? My request of you is, if it comes up, are you going to say that's not what this bill is about? Because it's important to protect. The employees want it. The employers obviously want it, just so that they're safe and sound relative to the law. Can you give me some peace of mind relative to the tip credit issue and other controversial kinds of things?
Sure. Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Atkins, it's not my intent to do anything but what we have here before us today.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Anderson. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anderson, under the amendment, I know some of the provisions is reporting the amounts received as required for tax purposes. So if the employees in a restaurant want to voluntarily enter into this, then that then requires the employer to kind of track who's getting what and include that in their reporting requirements for wages and things.
Representative Anderson?
Madam Chair, Representative Loon, that's correct, and that's just another way to give peace of mind to the wait staff that they're going to, whatever they put in, they get back to as well, so that there's a proper record and that they make sure they get what they put into the safeguard underneath the employer. Yes. Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Just one other question. Do you have any idea how many restaurants kind of already do this voluntary gratuity sharing?
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, Representative Loon, I don't have a figure for you. It is a common practice that wait staff do this, but you know what's difficult is that currently the employer, the restaurant owner, is not able to really help or participate in this process, and that's where the rub has been. It's been really problematic and been a headache for wait staff as well.
Thank you.
Any other questions for members? Anyone in the audience who'd like to testify for or against this bill? Representative Anderson, do you want to renew your motion as amended and refer this bill, House File 809, to the General Register?
Madam Chair, I renew my motion to send House File 809, recommended pass, to the General Register as amended.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Those opposed?
No. No.
The motion's carried. Thank you, Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair. Madam Chair.
Yes.
Just curious if there's any truth to the rumor that Representative Hoppe worked his way through college at Hooters.
Representative Nelson, no comment.
I don't think the Hooters was even around.
We're adjourned? We are adjourned. Thank you, members.